Hi, this is Justine Toe and welcome to Life and Faith. Well, World Environment Day is upon us. This is an initiative of the United Nations that has assigned the date June 5 each year to raise awareness of environmental issues and get some political momentum happening. Now, climate change, of course, is high on the agenda when it comes to talking about the environment. And care for the environment is such a talking point because the ramifications of ecological damage are so serious that they have the power to, you know, determine life on Earth for our children and their children. And in many ways, things aren't looking good in this area. So on Life and Faith, we thought we'd reflect on what it means to care for the environment and how that relates to matters of faith. Now, I've got Simon Smart with me. And Simon, we're probably not used to thinking about this topic from a perspective that involves faith. But do you think the way that we use and possibly abuse the environment, does that have a spiritual dimension?
Yes, it does, Justine, especially if you have a spiritual belief. For those of us who believe that this is God's creation, it ought to matter a lot how we treat the creation. Now, there are plenty of people who care for the environment without a sense of this mattering to God or some God or other. But if you're a believer, you have an even deeper reason to think that this stuff matters.
It was interesting to talk to people on the street to get a feel for how the public view this issue. Let's have a listen to what they had to say.
So why do you think that the environment is in the state that it's in?
Because we use too much, waste too much, and economic concerns come before environmental concerns in a lot of countries.
We can only control what we can control. There are certain areas we have no control over, but there are parts that we've got to play.
Littering the countryside, you know, polluting the harbour here, etc., etc.
Well, I just think it's an awful indictment on human beings that we would trash the place, and it's not very pleasant for our neighbours in the sense that other animals and creatures on this earth are suffering. And
I'm not concerned. I'd say it's something that plays in the back of all of our minds, that eventually one day there might not be much left of our natural resources and rainforests. And I think Australia's in the forefront in the global sense, because we're obviously, protecting parts of the Daintree rainforests, you know, have a good scope on those things. But it's the countries that don't have the education to understand what detrimental impacts development does in a lot of those unique areas, especially in parts of, you know, South America.
What do you think it is about human nature that makes us trash the planet?
Greed and the need for sort of comfort. The solution seems to me often talked about in terms of practicalities, but I'm not sure that's the right way to go. I think maybe the solution needs to be much more spiritual, so that if we care about ecologies and environments, if we have a spiritual connection with places, then we're probably less likely to do harmful things.
So there were some interesting responses there. You know, a lot of people noted that human greed is a major problem, and maybe people wouldn't consider greed to be a spiritual issue, but certainly they recognise a fair amount of selfishness in the way that we use the environment, often in a way that goes beyond what is sustainable. And I was really interested to hear what that last guy said, that spirituality is part of the solution. Now, of course, he was really vague about what that meant, but he did say it involved some sort of awareness and a reflectiveness on one's own activities and how we contribute to part of the problem. But let's think about what the Bible has to say to this. Simon, what light does the Bible shed on what it means to, you know, care for the environment or how we should treat it?
Yeah, well, broadly speaking, the Bible says that we ought to look after creation. To give you some background, the Genesis account in Genesis 1 and 2, the Genesis account paints a picture of a world that's teeming with life in all its forms, and that God brings this into being by the power of his words, the famous, let there be light, or let the water teem with living creatures, and that sort of thing. And we refer to this as creation. And then God creates men and women to be his representatives on earth. Humans are the high point of creation. And he puts them in this creation and tells them to fill and subdue the earth and to rule over it.
I got to stop you there, because when I hear these terms, fill and subdue and, you know, to rule over the earth, I get really awkward when I hear it put that way, because it These words seem to convey the impression that, you know, we can do whatever we like. It's up to us to rule over and use as we wish. We can do that with the environment. Is that right?
The text here is really establishing the place of humanity in the creation, where humans are to fill the earth, but to rule it as benevolent kings. There's very much that sense of a caring thing. It's not granting permission to trash and burn. It's anything but that. And then if we move to the second chapter of Genesis, that really spells out what this ruling over the creation might look like. In the garden, they are to work and to take care of it. And so if you're attending and caring for something, you're not going to just get all you can from it and sort of exploit it. You're going to work within its limits so that it can flourish along with yourself. It's a long-term and sustainable approach, if we can put it that way. Humans are to work. That's another interesting part of this. This is not, work is not a function of the fall, but it's part of creation. Now, I know sometimes work doesn't always feel like that, but of course we are in this sort of post-fall situation. So part of that work that we're given is being in harmony with and working with the creation. And of course, a few chapters later in Genesis, you get the story of Noah and the ark, and we get this sense of the responsibility of humans to care for and preserve animals. So in the story, you get this picture of God acting in a way to ensure that the earth and the creatures within it are sustained and preserved. It's a key part of the story. And so there's this obligation on the part of God's key representatives on the earth to be part of that, to be in harmony with what God's about, not the opposite.
Yeah, so there's a sense here that we are to be Earth's stewards or caretakers. You know, we're renting the Earth from God. We're looking after his animals, basically. So if there are solid biblical reasons for why Christians should care for and look after the planet, then, you know, well, why aren't Christians the leaders of the environmental movement?
Partly, I think it's from what I would say is a misleading theology that would have us, would have the earth destroyed at the end, and so, you know, why care for it if it's all going up in flames? We can come back to that later. But there might also be, I suspect, a reaction against the fact that there are plenty of people in the environmental movement who are closer to New Age spirituality than Christianity. So you often get people who believe things that are contrary to Christian belief, sure. Like one of them might be that everything is one, all is sort of divine, and we're all part of that and eternally part of this divine energy. Now, of course, Christianity sees people and all creation as separate from and distinct from the Creator. I think that's an important sort of theological difference. But sometimes Christians, in reacting to this, tend to throw the baby out with the bathwater, I think. I think that's changing now, especially with the rise of younger evangelical Christians. You see this especially in America, but other places as well, who are caring about a wide variety of issues that includes environmental care. And people who see that creation care is an important part of what it means to follow Christ. I think more and more Christians are seeing that there is a human cost as well to environmental damage, and that's forming an important part of the way they approach these issues.
Yeah, I did some reading about this the other day, and if sea levels rise, which is what the experts say is very likely to happen as a result of climate change, then we're going to have whole communities of people displaced. You know, the UN estimates that there are going to be some 50 million environmental refugees by 2020. And I had a look into this, and many of these places with the most vulnerable populations to having sea levels rise, we're talking about places like the Bahamas, you know, Vietnam, Guyana, the Netherlands, Bangladesh, Djibouti, Belize, Egypt, right? And Gambia as well. A lot of these places, maybe not the Netherlands, but these other places, lack the resources to cope with these consequences of climate change, which, you know, if you think about it, is really unfair because it's the heavily industrialized countries that are contributing to the amount of carbon in the atmosphere, and it's the world's poorest people who have to pay the price.
Well, that reminds me, a few years ago at the Centre for Public Christianity, we did an interview with the Christian environmentalist Bill McKibben from the States, and he said that we fail to love our neighbour when we drag our feet when it comes to reining in climate change. When you see the human costs of environmental damage, I think it's a compelling point. Of course, it's not just climate change. I know people argue about that, but there's pollution, waste, deforestation, soil erosion, the extinction of species of animals, which we've had a big role in. We've done a pretty good job of trashing the planet in some areas.
I think governments should do whatever they can. The price on carbon seems like a very good idea. any sort of price on pollution, recyclable use of materials, like, but with the millions and the billions of people that are in the world, I think there are massive problems, which in the long term, I think, can only be solved in a spiritual way. I have to sort of say I'm part of the problem. Like, I can't blame other people. I have to sort of go, it's rich Westerners, too many people on the planet, lifestyle and technologies. I would like to think I have a strong spiritual connection with particular landscapes and environments. But in the end, sometimes you make decisions which are like clearly harmful for the environment.
Other countries need to step up to the plate just as much as Australia is. And I think if we can all unite across, you know, different countries, then we're going to have some positive impacts.
If the majority of people actually realise and want to jump on board for that sort of solution, it's not going to come from the government.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity.
I actually calculated my ecological footprint the other day on those one of those online calculators, and apparently if everyone lived like me, we'd need something like 2.1 planets to, you know, to have all the resources necessary. Now, I don't know if that's like a lot in some ways. I mean, yes, it is a lot. We basically just need one planet. But perhaps I've also heard that Annie Leonard, who did the story of stuff in America, she says that if everyone lived like US populations, we'd need something like 3 to 5 planets. And so, not that I'm trying to make myself look better, but at the same time, it shows us that people in the West have an incredible lifestyle, and there's incredible cost to that as well.
It's massive overconsumption, isn't it?
And absolutely. Lots
of people are now seeing that there are terrible costs to this environmentally, but also relationally in a whole lot of ways.
So, Simon, in light of all this, is there any hope? Does the Bible tell us that there's anything that can be done about this?
Yes, there is, I think. The Bible speaks of a redeemed creation. This is a really important point. So in the letter to the Roman church, the Apostle Paul writes, and this is a famous part of the Bible, where he says that all of creation is groaning as if in the pains of childbirth, eagerly awaiting its release from bondage to ruin and decay. So at the fall, it's not just humans who've suffered, but creation itself. And so it's not to be left to its misery, though. So God's in the business of redeeming that. He promises to make things new. He talks about a new heaven and a new earth. It's a redeeming aspect of the earth as it is, heaven coming to earth. So God's not going to scrap the earth and start again. He promises to redeem it. I think that has profound implications for how we view the earth and our place in it.
Yeah, I can imagine that if God were to just do away with the world, we could develop this attitude that said that it didn't matter what we did, and you kind of mentioned this before, it wouldn't matter what we did with the world, because we could, you know, we would end up getting a shiny new earth one day, and that would be a really dangerous idea.
That has been, I think, a bit of a problem. It's much more like, if God is in the business of redeeming this creation, then we ought to be on board with that and fitting in with that and being a part of it. It's a privilege to be part of what he's doing. So in a tiny way, we can all be part of that in our corner of the globe.
What can we do then to look after the environment?
Yeah, I don't feel like I'm the right person to be sort of the expert on that. But of course, there's lots of things, practical everyday things like using energy more efficiently and recycling and reusing more and basically living more simply. It's a challenge for all of us. It's definitely a challenge for me. But we also need to develop an awareness of the interconnectedness of life on our planet. I think that's becoming clearer. The way I live my life, including the energy I consume, the car I drive, the choices I make, the things I buy, these decisions don't just stop with me, but they have ramifications for people all over the place and sometimes on the other side of the planet. So making decisions with a view to loving our neighbour is really important. We have to have a big vision of that. It's not just the person living next door to us, but we're connected with people all over the world. And this means, in my view, churches, Christians, ought to be leading the way in creation care, not lagging behind everyone else.
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, it's just talk, right? You know, if we claim to love our neighbour, then we need to live our lives accordingly, because the way that we live out our lives shows what we really believe. And of course, it's not just about loving our neighbour and sharing our lives with them, but sharing the planet with them and, you know, and understanding that, as you said, life is interconnected and what we do has ramifications for people elsewhere.
The Centre for Public Christianity, Beyond Religion.
So next time on Life and Faith, we're going to be talking about the idea of calling and vocation. What does it mean to have a sense of calling on your life? So join Simon Smart and I as we think about this issue. See you then.